In 1949, George Orwell's futuristic fictional novel 1984 was first published. In it, George Orwell depicted a socialist surveillance state. It was then that the phrase "Big Brother is watching you" came to have its really sinister meaning. In this fictional scenario, truth was turned on its head, language was completely revised, and in it, a Ministry of Truth boldly proclaimed, "War is peace, freedom is slavery, and also ignorance is strength." I suppose we could add something from today's jargon for the youngsters in the congregation here. Wicked is good. This new language, which is called Newspeak in 1984, was, in George Orwell's words, not only providing a medium of expression for the world view and mental habits proper for the devotees of INGSOC, that was the English socialist system, but to make all other modes of thought impossible. As you can imagine, along with Newspeak comes doublethink, and it was all basically covered by Mr. Bowles yesterday. In Parliament, not too long ago, our Prime Minister was warned that the book 1984 was a cautionary tale and not a textbook. But I fear it was to no avail. Also, my namesakes, H.H. Munroe, who died in 1916, made the following statement. He said, "We all know that prime ministers are wedded to the truth, but like other married couples, they sometimes live apart." Today, I think they were totally divorced. And today, my purpose is to draw our attention to what we perceive as being reality in this day and age, because we live in a time when fact and fiction are almost indistinguishable. When outright lies, half-truths, and the truth are put together in such a way that the average person has no way of knowing what reality really is. It is the hallmark of a truly Babylonian system, and we are told to come out of her. Now, I'd like you to turn with me, please, to the book of Isaiah, chapter 5 and verse 20. Here we read what the present-day Orwellian society has bequeathed to us. That is an almost total inversion of public and private morality. In Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20, we read the following words: "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." In George Orwell's book 1984, as I say, it was first published in 1949, this sort of thing happened. But more recently, a gentleman named David Kupelian wrote a book called The Marketing of Evil, and that was first published in 2005. In it, Mr. Kupelian, speaking of the media, writes on page 174, "Our eyes, our senses work just fine. But we've been lied to so thoroughly and consistently that we no longer perceive the meaning of what we see nor understand what we hear. Jesus Christ said, 'Hearing they shall hear and not understand, seeing they shall see and not perceive.'" Then, a little later, Mr. Kupelian goes on to state, "Throughout this book," that is The Marketing of Evil, "throughout this book, from gay rights to multiculturalism to sexual liberation, we've seen at every turn the central role the news media has played in selling radical agendas to Americans. I would add to the Western world." Continuing the quotation, "Gay rights, abortion rights, gun control, hate crime, separation of church and state, behind these and other facile news labels are what amount to virtual reality constructs. Sophisticated marketing products composed of lies and truth seamlessly sewn together. Poke at them a little and they burst, spilling out marketing slogans, half-truths, emotionalized reasoning, distortions and bold-faced lies. Whatever the focus of today's so-called mainstream news coverage is rooted powerfully in propagandistic impulses and results in a web of matrix-like delusions, which most of us think of as the real world. And just going on just a few more pages, in marketing evil, however, a much more profound process is at work. You're in the business of changing, seducing, and corrupting people. And the way back is not so easy because we all exist in a state of pride, which means we don't like to see that we've done something wrong. And then he again says, in truth, it is one thing to make a person do something wrong by deceiving him into thinking that it is right. But it is quite another thing to get him to face the fact that it was wrong and that he has been deceived. The human ego doesn't like to see that it is wrong, and especially doesn't like to admit that it was manipulated by another. And isn't that just what the media does to us today? There is an old proverb which says, "What a tangled web we weave when at first we practice to deceive." The outright lies, the half-truths, the truth intermingled and sold as fact. So-called experts peddle statistics and the results of surveys to sell us all kinds of products and all kinds of services, and worse, to convince us that some particular course of action is justified or justifiable. When they know that the results of their surveys and the statistics that they quote to us are completely and utterly bogus, how else could society have been sold such things as abortion and the sexual perversions, the gender-bending perversions of homosexuality? Goebbels once said, "The bigger the lie, the less willing people are to challenge it, because they will naturally say, surely no one could sell a lie like this." Also attributed to Nazi Germany is the statement that if you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it. I'd like you to turn with me now to Romans chapter 1 and verse 18. Everywhere we look, we see truth being denied. We see outrageous claims being unchallenged. We're unchallenged in politics, unchallenged in medicine, in finance, in industry, in commerce, in national and local governments. Everywhere you look, we find bald-faced lies being sold as the truth. And in Romans chapter 1, verse 18, we read the following. "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who hold, or more correctly, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness." I'd like you to consider a statement made by a US congressman in 1917, one Oscar Galloway, or Calloway. He said in 1917, "In March 1915, the J.P. Morgan interests, the steel, shipbuilding and powder interests, and their subsidiary organisations got together 12 men high up in the newspaper world and employed them to select the most influential newspapers in the United States and sufficient number of them to control generally the policy of the daily press. They found it was only necessary to purchase the control of 25 of the nation's greatest newspapers. An agreement was reached, the policy of the papers was bought to be paid for by the month, an editor was furnished for each newspaper to properly supervise and edit information regarding the questions of preparedness, militarism, financial policies and other things of national and international nature considered vital to the interests of the purchasers." That is the J.P. Morgan group, which includes all sorts of people. I mean, you know, you think about the Carnegie Foundation, the Rockefellers, the Bilderbergers, and the Trilateral Commission, the Commission for Foreign Relations, that's it. All sorts of groups, all vying to control what we are told in our daily press. In fact, in 1991, David Rockefeller, who was a founder of the Trilateral Commission, gave an address to a meeting of the Trilateral Commission in which he said the following. We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if it had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the work is now much more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. The supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries. And everyone seems to think that we have freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom in the media in the West. There are many people who come up with all sorts of conspiracy theories, and they are often laughed to scorn. But there is a real conspiracy going on, a very real conspiracy, and it has been permeating the world and its civilizations for almost 6,000 years. That conspiracy has now almost come to fruition. It will lead to the total annihilation of mankind, and unless those days be shortened, mankind and probably all life would disappear from the earth. In conclusion, I'd like you to turn with me, please, to Revelation chapter 18. We live in perilous times. I doubt that the common people have ever had such a daunting task when trying to form an opinion based on truth. We, however, in the church are much more fortunate. We are part of God's church and we have been called out of the world. And these days picture God's people coming out of sin, and that is our task now, to come out of sin. In Revelation chapter 18, and in verse 4, we read the following. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. About 4,000 years ago, God told Moses to go to Pharaoh and to tell him to let my people go. Pharaoh ignored that request. Today, the instruction is not to Pharaoh, and society in which we live will not willingly let us go. And so God says to us, come out of her, my people. This is an order that we ignore at our peril. These days of unleavened bread picture our journey out of this Orwellian Babylonian society, our journey out of sin. It does say in Malachi, actually, that of this world, there will be no other root nor branch left. It's going to be totally destroyed. God says, woe unto them who call evil good and good evil. And it's also revealed that God's wrath is upon those who revel in unrighteousness and who suppress the truth. And then he tells us to come out of her, my people, lest you partake of her plagues. And it is now up to us. And that is what these days show us. This is what we are now about to do. We are to come out of this society. God says, come out of her, my people, lest you receive of her plagues.